Good afternoon and welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. My name is Roger Metz, and I'm here with my co-host,
Taylor Metz, his and, favorite daughter.
Yes. Favorite.
Sorry, Jordan.
Favorite youngest daughter. National Daughter Day was this week, and I try to talk me out of that I don't have two of the best. Just go ahead. Somebody try to talk me out of the fact that I don't have the two best daughters out there.
I think that's the nicest thing you ever said to me on air.
Well, it's true. I've got two wonderful daughters.
I'm glad you realized that.
Jordan and somebody else.
There it is. I was waiting on that.
No, I do. I have to. But you are listening to 94.5 WGTK, The Answer in Greenville, South Carolina. And we're glad you're here with us. What do we got going on today, Taylor?
What have we got going on today? A lot.
We got a lot. First of all, we're talking to Jerry Weaver from Johnny Weaver from the Georgetown Wooden Boat Show. About that's coming up on, October the 18th, 19th, and 20th in Georgetown, South Carolina. And we're also talking to, she's lost her notes. We're also talking to Ed Paul. And what are we talking to Ed about?
The Somerton Duck Fest.
Which actually starts next Saturday, the 5th, with what? With a fishing tournament.
Oh, yeah. Bass fishing tournament.
That's right.
Your
favorite thing. Bass fishing tournament. Then on the 12th is when all they have the stuff in Somerton.
Yep.
So we're going to talk about both of those. Talk to both those people on the show. You got something you want to talk about later on?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
5 ways to ruin a great hunting photo.
Yeah.
Y'all are going to want to hear that.
Look, there's a lot of first-time photographs being taken. And you're going to draw a little bit on your first-time photo of a deer on this one and talk a little bit about it. It's a great article written by Brian Grossman. Today is National Hunting and Fishing Day. Hope a lot of you went out and went hunting, fishing, went to Seneca and participated in the event down there. We're actually not live. We're recording the show. Taylor, what are you doing for National Hunting and Fishing Day?
I don't know. What do you have planned?
Well, I'm going to be participating in a first responders bass fishing tournament down at the Savannah River site. And my media boat driver is none other than Bass Pro Tour, former FLW Cup champ, Anthony Gagliardi. He's going to chauffeur me around the water for 2 days.
I'll be praying for him.
Taking pictures. But I'm participating in National Hunting and Fishing Day. Are you doing anything?
Seeing as how you are my chauffeur to do all this stuff, and Mom won't let me get up in a tree stand, and I can't go fishing, so probably nothing.
Wow.
Listen, just no.
No, I have to say you put in your time on the water, in the woods, participating in our hunting and fishing heritage. And that's been a lot of fun over the years, hasn't it?
It has.
And I look forward to that being a lot of fun in the future. And I tell you, folks, hunting and fishing, it is our heritage. You know, when this country was formed, it was part of what the founders envisioned, that the game was not owned by the landed gentry, that it was accessible to all the people, which is why you have a hunting license, fishing license, because the government takes care of the game populations and all, and we get to participate.
We do.
And it's been fun. It's been a lifelong journey of mine, and I'm excited to see my two best daughters do the same thing.
Two
best daughters. But it's going to be a full show. Hang on tight. You're going to hear from Mr. Weaver, our conversation we have with Mr. Weaver, and then Ed's at the bottom of the hour. And then we're going to come back and wrap up the show with some good stuff. So... Right? Good stuff,
yep.
Right, Tyler?
Good stuff.
Good stuff. All right, hang on through the break. More Woods and Water, South Carolina on the other side. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Taylor, we got a pretty good one here.
Oh, very good one. Y'all are going to want to listen up to this.
This was one of your grandfather's when they were still traveling and getting around. This is one of the ones he loved to go to because, you know, he's a woodworker.
Mm-hmm.
He loved it, and he loved watching them work with wood, build boats. So we've got a special guest on the line with us. He is Mr. Johnny Weaver. He's with the Georgetown Wooden Boat Show. Mr. Weaver, thank you for taking a few minutes out of your day to be on Woods and Water, South Carolina.
I'm glad to. This is one of my favorite topics.
And from what I understand, you have been around the Wooden Boat Show or whatever it has been since its inception.
I think I was a helper maybe after the first year.
Uh-huh.
The Wooden Boat Show actually started as an exhibit, a wooden boat exhibit, in a little festival called Bayfest. It was a fall festival designed to bring people downtown to Georgetown.
Okay.
And Bayfest sort of went away, but the people that had the wooden boat exhibit, Lynn Anderson and Susan Sanders and Sid Hood and Sally Swineford, decided it was a good thing to have and to continue to bring people downtown, so they moved it to Francis Marion Park right there in the middle of downtown Georgetown.
Right.
Sid and Sally owned the River Room, and at the time, Lynn Anderson and Susan Sanders owned the Harbor Specialty, so they had businesses right there across the street from each other. And this was called the Wooden Boat Exhibit for a while because that's kind of what it was.
Right.
And in 1993, we had 35 exhibits, and then we had, I think we were begging to get 12 sponsors. And now we're up to over 140 exhibits and approximately 300 sponsors.
My goodness.
So this thing has grown considerably since the days of being an exhibit there at Francis Marion Park. A few years later, we changed it to the Wooden Boat Show because that was more accurate of actually what it was. And we had boats. By then, we put them out in the parking places along Front Street, closed off part of downtown. And we had the boats being exhibited there. And then we had vendors who wanted to put up or come in and sell things at the boat show.
Okay.
And as long as they didn't compete with us, they can't sell T-shirts and things like that, because this is our fundraiser, major annual fundraiser. Well, the vendors that come in, whatever they have has to be maritime related.
Okay.
And that has grown now. Last year we had 40 what we call commercial vendors selling anything from jewelry, artwork, prints, wood carvings, all kind of things right there on Front Street. We are now closing off 3 blocks of Front Street.
Wow.
We've lined up both sides, all 3 blocks. The merchants downtown will tell you almost unanimously that Saturday is the best business day of the whole year. All of the shops are open, and people come in. They come to the boat show. They look at the vendors, and they visit all the shops. The restaurants do a great business then.
Sure.
We do have food at the boat show, but most people go in and get dinner or stay on into the evening and eat dinner there.
Sure.
Great place to visit whether you're having a boat show or not. Georgetown, the downtown historic part of Georgetown, is a wonderful place to see.
It is. It is.
But we have boats on the land, and we have boats in the water. We extend the current city docks by about 100 feet on either side, and we'll have anywhere from 35 to 45 boats on display in the water.
Wow.
And they can be anything from, I think we had an 8-foot little sailing pram last year, up to, we have had an 85-foot Navy minesweeper in there.
Wow.
We've had shrimp boats. We've had trophies, Chris Crafts, of course, just all sure. kinds of wooden boats, all sizes, shapes, some homemade, some factory made, but all wood.
That's one
of the requirements that they don't have to be wood top sides and all of that, but the hull and the main structure of the boat has to be wood.
You know, you mentioned the Chris Craft, and I saw a little blurb that came out on your Facebook page that you're going to have a Chris Craft that was built in 1941 on display this year.
Yes, we are. That's a beautiful boat, too. I can't wait to see that one come in. We've got one boat. Last year we had two boats that were 100 years old.
Wow.
We've got different categories that we put the boats in, and we've got row and canoe and kayak, and then coming right on up, we've got sailboats, paddle boats, and the paddle boats and sailboats are classic, and that's one that was older than 1960.
Okay.
We have paddle boats, the same thing, classic, and newer ones. We have outboards and inboards. We have owner-built and designed boats. So we've got several different categories that we judge the boats on, and then they get an award. Whoever wins gets an award Saturday night at the awards dinner.
Okay. Well, there's a lot going on. I know Taylor had a question probably about the one of the biggest ones, and I mentioned at the beginning, this is my dad's an engineer and loves to woodwork and all. Taylor, there's one thing that you wanted to ask him about the kind of the main event going on if you're a boat builder.
I was looking on the website and I ran across the main events and I was looking. Tell us a little bit about the Wooden Boat Challenge.
The Wooden Boat Challenge is something actually was started up in, I think, Connecticut back in somewhere around the 80s. And the idea of it was for everyone to build the same boat, and it had competitions in Maine, Connecticut, Beaufort, North Carolina, and Georgetown. And I think Georgetown won what we call the world record one time when we do this. But basically what it is the participants in this, we have two-person teams. I used to say two-man teams.
Yes, but...
But it's a lot of times it's male and female. We had a girlfriend, boyfriend doing it one time. And
okay.
I think they ended up getting married. They didn't kill each other doing it. I'm not really sure I could do it. But
Neither could I.
We have... we can take in up to 18 teams, and I think last year we had 15.
Okay.
But they are... And they can get the plans ahead of time and do some practice boats. But that day, they are given a set of plans and a pile of lumber. And it's 12 o'clock they start. They have 4 hours to build this boat. All are building the same boat.
Okay.
At 4 o'clock, the whistle blows. They are judged on the time it takes them to build the boat.
All right.
And then they judge on the quality of the boat, just what it looks like.
Okay.
It's got all the gaps in and stuff like that on the clothes. And then at 5 o'clock, we put them in the water and we race them. Each team member has to row it out and back. And we have, usually with so many boats, we have 3 or 4 heats with about 3 or 4 boats in each heat.
Okay.
And each team member has to race out and come back. And the other team member gets in and goes out and come back. And one of them, as I mentioned, the boyfriend and girlfriend, she went out first. And when she came back, you could tell the boat was kind of wallowing in the water a little bit.
Uh-oh.
And it was taking on water. When he got in, he got about halfway to the buoys, put his life jacket on, and we have a series of pictures of where he just kept getting deeper and deeper in the water until finally he was there with his paddle and life jacket on. and the crowd cheering the whole time.
Oh, I'm sure. I am so sure.
It is wild seeing that boat race. And that's kind of the culmination of everything on Saturday.
I got you.
So that is interesting. They have their own. They've got the other thing about this is they only have about a 12 foot by 12 foot space in which to build these boats.
Okay.
So they are kind of cramped in there, And when that whistle goes off, stand back because there's sawdust going everywhere. And it is, that is a great event, and we've had that for several years. And that draws a lot of people down to the boat show just to walk through and watch all of that go on. But you're able to walk through the whole tent and see all of the teams as they work it and see the progress.
And that's on Saturday. We were talking earlier about trying to make it down and seeing it. We're actually going to be in Charleston on the 19th. But then we talked about Sunday, maybe coming up Sunday morning. And you talked about the corrugated boat regatta that we need to be there for Sunday. Tell us a bit about that one.
We started that about 3 or 4 years ago. One of our board members had seen it somewhere at another venue or something. And International Paper Company, in fact, yesterday, we took 4 pickup trucks and went to International Paper here in Georgetown and got 4 loads of cardboard and cardboard sheets. Excuse me, corrugated. I've already been chastised on that a couple of times.
Okay.
But we picked up the material, and people can come by and pick up what they need anytime from the museum, and it's no cost to them. They can build any style boat they want.
Okay.
And then there again, after they finish building, when we have the, we don't call it a race because it's, that's not really terrible. They've got to go in the water and get out to a certain buoy that we have out there just to show their seaworthy. And the first year we had it, we had awards like the Titanic Award, the Most Dramatic Award, and the Best Boat and the Fastest and all that stuff.
Right.
And the group and different little different civic clubs and stuff like that.
Sure.
People like that build these things. And the one that got the Titanic Award, they put it in the water, they all got in the boat, and it went straight to the bottom. Right there. And
didn't even make it to the iceberg.
It didn't even see an iceberg. The most dramatic was 3 teenage girls that got about 10 feet from the dock, and it started singing and freaking, and they started screaming, and all this saved me, I'm going to die, and all this kind of stuff. So drama queens. That was so funny. They got the most dramatic award.
Yeah, I know one that would be right in there if she was in a corrugated boat.
I was going to say don't say anything, but I guess that didn't work.
No, it didn't work. Sorry, you're outnumbered on this one.
That thing has turned out to be a lot of fun. And also on Sunday, we have the Optipram Regatta.
Okay.
Several years ago, it was a deal down here in Georgetown. Realize that there's not a sailing anywhere in children learning how to sail with all the rivers right here.
All right.
So we started a little sailing program for young children in a little 8-foot Optimus pram. And since we're a wooden boat show, and that's where we come from, volunteers built those boats. So we've got wooden Optiprams that were built locally.
Okay.
And we started that school. We were hoping we were going to get 15 people to sign up that first year. We had 75.
Oh, my goodness.
We are now doing classes in the morning and classes in the afternoon. People start coming in, generally grandparents, start coming in early in the year to make sure their grandchildren are signed up for a week at the sailing school with their sailing class.
That is
and
great.
They have a ball. I was down there one time, and there's children get in these boats, and they're in the boat by themselves, both of them. Some of them have been in the boat. Some of them have never, both of them have been in the boat by themselves. And by the end of the week, they are sailing around and go down.
Wow.
And to see them about Wednesday, they see this literally hump day. And that's when they have a little meltdown sometimes. They just
sure.
And all that kind of stuff. And then Friday, you can see them coming in and just smiling, just beaming when they come in. They're so happy they come into the dock.
Wow.
So that has been a real good feature that we have now at the museum, or an event, rather.
But there
will be a regatta there Sunday for that, so you'll see that.
We'll still have
all the exhibits on Sunday.
Okay.
We'll have the food. We have a beer garden on Sunday and Saturday.
Okay.
Of course, all of the restaurants are open now on Sunday.
Got some music going on.
Got music, got band at each end, and it's just about as crowded on Sunday as it is on Saturday.
We
just started the Sunday a few years ago, and that has worked out real well for us.
Well, sure. If you're going to come down to the coast and see some wooden boats, just stay the whole weekend. Make it a 2-day event.
And a lot of our exhibitors told us that, you know, they could do everything they can to get a boat or a vendor or whatever down here. It's a whole lot better to stay 2 days and just come in 1 day for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we tried the Sunday, and it worked well, and now all of a sudden we full 2 days and three blocks closed off downtown. And
Sounds,
the businesses love it.
Sounds like a great event and something that for everyone. I mean, if you're a woodworker, you get out and watch somebody build a boat. If you just like cool boats, there are a lot of those there. There's food. There's shopping for the ladies. There's some fun. And
we have a kids boat building little booth also where they can come in, and it's, you know, for small children.
Sure.
Got a piece of wood with they put a bass on it. They got markers there to color them and everything. And then we've got a little swimming pool there that we fill up. They put them in there and sail them around that pool. That thing stays busy all day long.
Well, Mr. Weaver, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to do this for me. I hope there's some people that are listening that'll, if they can't make it down this year, they'll make plans to look forward next year and make it part of their fall on the coast of South Carolina.
Well, I hope they'll come. This is our 30th year, and every year it is on the third Saturday of October.
There you go.
Don't know what the date is, but it's the third Saturday of October every year.
Well, thank you very much. I look forward to seeing what happens, and hope we'll see you on Sunday the 20th.
I hope so. I'll be right there.
Thank you, Mr.
thank
Weaver.
Thank you.
Right. Have a good
day. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Good talk to you.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. It's not too long before duck season will be here. In fact, you know, you probably got a little teal season thing going on. But duck season is coming, and something Taylor, you and I enjoy doing together.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I miss it.
Yeah, we didn't do much duck hunting last year. But for those of you who might not duck hunt, so to say, there's something for you that you can go be involved and learn a lot and have a good time. That's the Summerton Duck Fest. It's coming up next Saturday. We've got an event going on. Then the main thing happens the 12th. Fortunate enough to have Ed Paul join us. Ed, thanks. You've been on the show before. Thanks for coming back.
Thank you for having me. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Well, I told Taylor you're somewhat of a competitive bass fisherman, and you know, she likes to bass fish. So she's going to get this whole game rolling with something that I know you love to talk about.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Tell me a little bit about the Fall Open Team Bass Tournament. Tell me a little about what that involves and what's all going on.
Okay. Well, it's coming up on October 5th, and it's a two-man team event. Free registration is available online at www.duckfestfun.com. And it's a great opportunity for people to get signed up and get out there and kick off this wonderful tournament. It'll be hosted on the 5th, like I said, at Safe Light. Teams will blast off. We have Derek, who is our tournament director. He'll be there to get things rolling. And, you know, it's $5,000 first prize. The bass on Santee are really getting kicked off at that point. They're out gorging, trying to get all the bait they can get to go into the winter. They're in transition stage in between shallow and deep. So Santee Cooper, you know, offers incredible, incredible cover and structure for those type fish staging in those areas. So I'm looking forward to some big bags. I think it took in the high 20s last year to win it. And top 10 had to be, you know, up close to 18, 20 pounds to get in. But it pays out very, very nice. It's a great kicker tournament coming up in October for the CBC, too. So the classic final for $50,000 CBC is going to be that last weekend in October out of John C. So we're excited to get things kicked off with the fall team tournament. There'll probably be anywhere from 60 to 100-plus boats in there. And it's a great time.
That's some competition for you, Taylor.
Yeah, for sure.
I know how competitive you are, and I think I got one sitting beside me is about the same. So you two ought to get together to vote sometimes, which y'all do.
Absolutely. I sure love to do it.
Well, the other thing you love to do is duck calling. And I know there's a lot going on with the Summerton Duck Fest besides the duck calling contest. We'll talk about that. What are some of the other events that you've got going on? And by the way, tell us where Summerton is.
Summerton is right in between Santee and Manning. So if you're coming 95 from 95 north, we're on exit 108, just before you get to the bridge on Lake Marion. You can come in that way. Coming south, it's as soon as you cross Lake Marion, you can take the first or second exit, but the second one puts you right in downtown.
All right.
Summerton, that's exit 108, right in Clarendon County.
And this is the fourth year. It's a family-friendly annual event. Promotes Summerton as the duck capital of South Carolina while highlighting the town's efforts and ability to host all who enjoy the outdoor adventures that Summerton has to offer. And it's right in the middle of everything. So on October, okay, we've got October 5th taken care of. October 12th, what are a lot of things that are going on down there in town?
On October 12th in town, we'll have a big pool set up for Ultimate Air Dogs. They bring an awesome show. Bring a lot of following, so we have opportunities for people to bring their pups and let them take a chance at jumping and seeing who can go the farthest in the pool. And it's pretty neat. You'll have some professional type dogs out there. You'll have some that have only seen water a few times, so it's a lot of fun. That event, and we'll have a cornhole tournament. We'll have a 5K color run going on that morning. We'll have a fun run following up that. We'll have a cook-off. We'll have some great activities going on in between as well. We've got some jump houses and some fun stuff for the kids to do, some arts and crafts stuff. We'll have a parade. We'll have a firefighter challenge going on out there. And then we'll have the duck calling contest, which this year we'll have a Swamp Fox Regional, which will send the winner to the Worlds in Stuttgart to compete for the World Championship. And then we added a second sanction, which is going to be the Santee Cooper Regional. So we have two sanctioned contests that are going to send two different representatives to represent our festival and our contest in the Worlds. And then we'll have a two-man meet competition, a single-man meet competition, we'll have a junior meet competition, and we'll have a beginner's competition for youth. So it's a lot going on, a lot of fun. We'll have some cool cars parked around for people to see, some awesome vendor booths, some good food. Truck set up to get some good food, and we look forward to seeing everybody out there.
What time does duck calling contest start Saturday?
The duck calling will start at 11 a.m.
Okay. All right. You missed something that kind of Taylor was kind of interested in.
Yeah, looking here at the calendar of events for this, tell us a little about the Instagram scavenger hunt.
The Instagram scavenger hunt will just be a different places set up in the town around the events of the vendors, where teens who want that screen time on their phone, which is another topic, they can get in and go and see different places, and the first one that completes it gets a prize. It's pretty neat how that's set up too. So it could be different vendor booths. You have to get signatures. You have to get, well, not signatures, but like a picture of you at the destination showing that you met your requirement. You go to the next and you come back and get some prizes. It's a neat activity to kind of expose those people who want to do it that way to different booths and different things going on at the festival.
Sure. Yeah, she saw that and latched on to that. She's the Instagrammer.
Sure. Sure.
Good deal. Just make sure you look up every now and then. So
oh, absolutely.
Walk into a building.
Oh, yeah. I'll give her this. She's observant. She'll see things that sometimes I miss. So I don't stay on her too much about being on it. Well, that's cool. That's October the 5th for the Bass Tournament. Registration is still open for that. The 12th is when you want to be in downtown Summerton for all the events and all. And I think that pretty much covers the Duck Fest. And I've got something else in here because Ed used to be with SCWA and now you moved on. Take just a minute and tell us about, because I'm gonna talk either today or next Saturday about the lottery hunts that the Department of Natural Resources has up for the duck hunts. But you're with an organization now, so tell us a little bit about that organization and how it folds into the duck hunts that DNR is doing.
Absolutely, yeah. First, you know, I was blessed to be a part of SCWA and their youth programs for years and still support what they've got going on. I took a position over at South Carolina Wildlife Partnership, SCWP, and we are partnered with SCDNR. And what we do is we solicit private landowners who will allow us to bring in public hunters to have public hunts on their property. And by doing that, we offer it to all of the SCDNR waterfowl hunters who put in for the annual draw. If they are not selected this current year, then we put them in a separate pool if they opt in to the SCWP opportunities. If they opt in, then without affecting their DNR preference points for the next year, we put them in a separate draw, and whoever gets drawn out gets to go on private land hunts with SCWP. So it's really neat. It's going to provide more opportunities to get drawn on some good hunts on well-managed land, specifically for that type of species, and just give opportunities. So we're protecting hunter heritage. We're protecting the freedoms that we're so blessed with and just creating that chance to have more opportunity and helping benefit the Department of Natural Resources, too. So it's a great partnership. And we're looking forward to it.
And what a way to give access to people who normally wouldn't have it. So kudos to all those private landowners who see the value in it and are open their doors to people they don't know to give them an opportunity to hunt, like you said, in a well-managed place. Kudos to them, and thanks a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And those private landowners, they're protected. They're protected by insurance and liability and risk. We come in and SCWP takes care of all of that, and we are with the hunters on the property to and from, and you know, acting as a guide or someone who puts them in the right area. So,
great opportunity and great benefit to our hunting heritage, Ed. Look, thanks for doing this for me. Thanks for taking a few minutes and being willing to come back on the show. Sometimes I wonder how many times people want to come back. But you answered the phone this morning, and you're it.
Hey, I enjoyed it. I always do. And we appreciate helping us grow Summerton Duck Fest and this event and what it's all about.
Summerton Duck Fest, duckfestfun.com. Ed Paul, thanks very much, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you. God bless.
Yes, sir.
Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. I'm Taylor Metz. Obviously, not Roger Metz.
Very good.
Sound a little different.
A little different.
Just a little different. Well, as we mentioned in the first segment, you know, we have a really good article here from Brian Grossman, who is the communications manager for QDMA. And he wrote 5 ways to ruin a great hunting photo. And, you know, hunting season's coming up. We've already been in dove season for a while. Deer season's kicked in with bow season, and gun season kicks off soon. But when I shot my first deer 2 years ago, and I think Dad took like 60,000 pictures.
At least.
At least.
Because I had read this article.
So.
But it's one of those first you will never get back.
It is. And so you want to make sure you capture every little thing from finding the deer to getting set up. But that's one of the main things we're going to talk about is when you're getting a picture with a dove or a deer or something, you have a gun involved. Safety is always key.
Paramount. paramount. That's one of the easiest ways to ruin a hunting picture.
It is. And it's, you know, whether the gun's pointed in a the direction it shouldn't be at somebody, or whether the barrel's right in your face, it's something you need to be aware of. And you can get carried up in the moment when you've shot your first deer, or even if it's not your first deer, and you can get carried away. And it's so easy.
And looking back, I have some of those pictures. You know, you're in excitement, you lay the gun down across the deer, and you sit behind the deer, and the gun is pointed right at you. And whether it's unloaded or not, doesn't matter. In the picture, it looks like you could shoot yourself.
It does. It's very unfortunate. That's a really good way to ruin a good picture.
It is.
The next one is you didn't keep it tasteful. This is where it gets kind of sensitive, because we don't want to come across as covering up what we do, but we want to keep it respectful to people. And that's like if, you know, you kill a deer, the tongue's hanging out, make sure to put it back in.
Sure.
Make sure there's not blood everywhere. And honestly, the future of hunting depends on the support of non-hunters.
Right. Hunting is supported to the tune of about 80% of the U.S. population when it is for the consumption of meat, which is why you and I hunt. Mom fixes a lot of venison during the year.
A lot.
And it's very good. It's grass-fed, shall we say. It's hormone-free. It's not grass. Yeah, they live on acorns. You'll see, at our house, it's acorns and soybeans and sorghum and brown top millet and greenbrier.
Yep.
It is good, lean, healthy meat. And from that standpoint, when you talk about keep a taste, where you put it is a dead animal. There's no covering that up. There's no apologizing for it. But it doesn't take much to clean up. So it's a tasteful photo for not only your hunting buddies, but for the people you go to school with.
Mm-hmm.
They might not hunt.
Not everybody that's going to see this picture on social media or, like I said, to a group chat or something, they're not all going to be hunters.
Right.
And you want to come across as respectful to them.
And by coming across respectful, you pick somebody's interest who may be interested in hunting.
Exactly.
What else?
Well, the next thing is make sure to keep that picture natural. It doesn't matter. I know for my picture, we didn't go out into the stand. We were sitting on the deck. I had jeans and boots and a camouflage sweatshirt, no makeup. My hair was a mess, but that's the whole thing. And like, especially for girls. And then when a deer's down, it gets hectic. And sometimes you either forget to take the picture or something, but make sure that background that you've taken that picture in is natural, and make sure you look natural. I mean, yes, clean the deer up a little bit. Just try and make it look natural, but put together. And if you can't get that picture in the woods, whether the lighting's not right, which is something we'll get to in a second, make sure that you're in your yard with a natural backdrop.
No tailgate pictures.
No tailgate pictures, please. Please.
We spent probably 20 minutes with you and yours, just taking some different angles. And you're going to talk about lighting in a minute, because we were in the woods. It was kind of dark in there because it was thick. But we moved it around. We took some black and whites.
We did.
Which was pretty cool. Some of that you can edit afterwards. But yeah, just make it look like you're in that setting. You're not. Nobody else will know but
setting.
You. That's right.
The next 2 points are not just strictly hunting. This could be for hiking and camping and fishing. But like we said, poor lighting can ruin a photo.
Absolutely.
You may be able to edit it on editing software like
Lightroom.
Yeah. I better say, like, he spends hours editing pictures.
Well, but I don't edit much in a picture. I've learned over the years, because I think the first year in 2014, I took somewhere around 14,000 or 15,000 pictures at different events that I was going, because we travel a lot. We go to a lot of places, and I take a lot of pictures. And I know I just got back from Colorado, and I was amazed that I only took about 12 or 1,300 pictures over 5 days. And a lot of them I was shooting multiples because I was in the car. And, you know, you'd get a telephone pole in the way or something like that. So it's really come down, because background plays a lot. But This is a really good one, the lighting issue.
It is, yeah. And whether it's day or night, the key is to getting as close to the subject as possible without using Zoom.
Yes.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about why you not use Zoom?
No, this is your article.
Well, but you are the pro here.
I'm not the pro. What happens in Zoom, especially on a phone, because a lot of people go into the woods with a cell phone, and when you Zoom a cell phone, most cell phones, unless you've got like the iPhone, I don't know what's the latest, 11, it's got some kind of really, really cool
three
camera.
Cameras.
Yeah, and I noticed not on the iPhone, but some of the other cameras on some phones are really better than an iPhone camera, at least the one I've got. But on mine, if you Zoom in with an iPhone camera, it pixelates.
Mm-hmm.
It grayscales, and it does not take a very good picture. So, yeah, she's exactly right. Try not to Zoom. Try to get close.
This is especially important at night because the flash can really light up a picture,
yeah.
And it can make it look really bad or really good. So natural light is the best way to go with this one.
Sure.
And if the sun is affecting the photo and shadows are falling, use a tree to block direct light.
That's right.
And just try to get that different angle to get that light right. And if it's too dark, try and find somewhere where it's lighter.
Sunlight between 11 and 4, sometimes 10 to 4, 10 to 5 in the summertime, it makes taking a good picture hard, especially when you can't control that background. So when you have an opportunity, like with a fish or with an animal or a campsite or something like that, move around where you do. You get a tree that blocks the sunlight, it softens everything, but I tell you, early morning and late evening, it's hard to take a bad picture.
Yeah, it is, yeah. And the next way is just in general, you didn't take enough pictures.
Okay. We are far past the 12 exposure. you probably don't. Well, you did. We found a roll of film laying around the house. It's been there for probably 2 years now. And we just didn't know it was on it. But we finally got it developed when it had like 10 exposures on it.
That was scary.
It was scary.
Let's just say a summary of it was me holding a hammer because we were redoing my room.
Oh, gosh.
But
we are. We're past that. So
we are.
Taking enough pictures.
Nope. Just, it's the key to getting a lot of great pictures is because when you take different pictures, try and get different angles.
Yes.
Again, mess with that lighting. Mess with the zoom. Make sure everything's in focus. Make sure the subject is got the perfect kind of light. And I know it sounds like a lot of work, but it'll be so worth it.
Well, this is a picture of the last lifetime.
Mm-hmm, it will.
Those pictures we took of you and your first deer. I did some in black and white. There are some that are vertical. I can't believe I took a vertical picture, but I did. I always try to take those horizontal pictures. A lot of them are horizontal. The colors, it was fall.
It was fall.
The colors were good. And those pictures, that's a one-time deal. And you never know. Sometimes you will know because you can sit there and look at it. But like on the view screen of my camera, it's the pixels in the view screen are not the pixels that the camera takes. So therefore, when I zoom in and look at it, it may be a little blurry. The overall picture looks good, but I won't know until I get it back on a computer screen whether it's a really good picture. So take a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
You can delete them.
Yep, take a bunch. And just remember, taking those pictures, take some time to clean up the deer or fish or bird. Whatever you've done that you wanted to get the picture of, position it in a nice natural backdrop and put a big smile on your face.
That's right. And usually in those times, there's already a big smile on your face.
Yes.
Yours
if there's not, you're doing the wrong thing.
and as a parent, that was so much fun for me to sit there and shoot all those pictures. And looking back on it, it's one of those memories that will last a lifetime.
It is.
Not only the pictures. Quickly to a short calendar of events here. When Travis Sumner from National Wild Turkey Federation was on the other day, he mentioned the Learn to Burn Field Day. That's coming up October the 1st, 8:30 to 4:30 at the NWTF headquarters in Edgefield, South Carolina. $25 cost. And I'm not sure if you can still register for this, but you might get a hold of them and see. They might still let you in. Bobwhite Quail, the South Carolina Bobwhite Quail Initiative, Department of Natural Resources, Clemson Extension Services, National Turkey Federation, Quail Unlimited, or Quail Forever, the NRCS, USDA, and the South Carolina Forestry Commission are offering a class Tuesday, October the 8th, 2019, from 9 to 4 at Wise's Barbecue House in Newberry, South Carolina. Sounds like a good place to have a class. But anyway, join biologists and foresters from all those agencies as they talk about bobwhite quail management and all. You'll interact directly with a biologist, classroom sessions, afternoon sessions in the field. You can go through clemson.edu/forestry for more information, or just Google the Bobwhite Quail Initiative. It'll be on their webpage. And you've got one for us?
We do. October 12th in Spartanburg, South Carolina at Camp Croft, we've got the Local Hiker Outdoor Challenge. And this is where it's a team event.
Yep.
You'll go, and there's a little, if to get more information, you can go to localhiker.com. There will be an award prize packages for first, second, and third place. You can pre-register. That is required. The minimum age to participate is 18. Limited number of spaces are available, so don't miss out to take this chance to test your outdoor skills and win some awesome gear.
Michael Silverman of the Local Hiker loves this thing. Absolutely loves it. Good show. A lot of information. I know sometimes it seems overwhelming, but hopefully it's good. And it's informative, and it gives you something to either get to now or put it on your calendar for next year. Hey, this rolls around again. Something I want to go to. Well, real quickly, delayed harvest in North Carolina opens up October the 1st. Delayed harvest waters for all you trout fishermen. Y'all will understand what that is. And as always, thanks for tuning in. Thanks, Heather, for being here.
Of course.
As always, make time to get out there. Take the back roads when you can. And don't forget the camera. See you next week. More Woods and Water, South Carolina.